Hello, everybody. I am Dave McVeigh, and this is our annual Twilight special. Every year we do this, and I got to be very, very clear that it's not that we enjoy these films. It's just that they are an event, and you kind of have to go along with the ride on these because they have become, and this term has become very overused, they are a cultural phenomenon. And I'm not entirely sure why they're a cultural phenomenon, but we'll discuss that in more detail. I'm Dave McVeigh. I am joined in studio today by Robin Smith, who has been our correspondent on Twilight for the last year and a bit.
Thank you, Robin.
How are you?
I am fine. I am relieved. We are done. I'm free.
Oh, dear. So we are talking today, of course, about Twilight, the Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 2. That's a mouthful.
I just call it, you know, Twilight BD 4.2. Easy.
4.2. Okay, not a problem. Now, we are going to do this slightly differently. From those who have been listening to the show on a regular basis, you'll notice that we didn't introduce this the normal way. We didn't say, hello, welcome to episode whatever. This is not actually an episoded number of Film Actually. This is just a special. Because, as you know, we are on hiatus at the moment. But we thought we cannot let certain moments go by.
Absolutely. We would be doing, this is a public service, really. Absolutely.
Now, Robin has also written the final chapter to her ongoing
saga. She can have a saga, I can have a saga too.
Why not? Your ongoing saga of analyses, I guess we would say, because they aren't reviews as such.
You call them opinion pieces.
Theses. Something like that.
Yes.
And that will be going. That will be going up on the site as well. That'll actually probably be on the site before this episode airs, so you can go and look for that. Can you give us the title of that that wonderful piece?
Well, there's the "Don't just stand there. Let's get to it. Strike a pose. There's nothing to it." That.
There you go. So today, what we are going to do is we are going to have a little look at Twilight Saga: Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Yes.
We're going to give it a little review. We're going to talk about it. We will go into a spoiler section so we can discuss in deep analysis, because there's a few things I want to talk about what we can't talk about outside of the spoiler zone. And then I thought what we would do, because it is the end, I almost feel like we should be playing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. Anyway, because it is the end of this saga, which has been with us, by the way, can I point out, from when we first started podcasting.
Well, it was 2008 was the first film.
And so was us.
Yeah. And I mean, the books were around about 5 minutes before that, really.
Something like that. And Stephanie Meyer actually has a new film coming out.
Really?
Based on her book, The Host, which is actually, interestingly enough, the film is written by and directed by Nickel, the guy who did Gattaca. You might actually have something with a little bit more intelligence behind it. I don't know. Anyway, it depends on whether or not he decides to rewrite her or be faithful
to her. She's pretty tough, I believe, in keeping it all very the way she wants it, as evidenced by the lack of cohesion through the whole lot,
Judging by the writing level of this series of films, maybe she should have relinquished control.
I think so.
That would be one of my major complaints with this entire series. But we will go back and we'll have a little look at the Twilight Saga.
Absolutely.
As a whole. Now, I haven't gone back and rewatched them all because I kind of vowed that I wouldn't.
And you gave me permission not to. I took you at your word.
So we're going to be doing it all from memory.
Well, I actually did review my reviews, which was a bit of a tweak for me, and it all came back to me, sort of a bit like, you know, PTSD, really. Like, oh, my God, I remember now.
I think, and if you haven't read Robin's analysis of all these films, go back. It's very entertaining.
Thank you.
It is very entertaining. I've enjoyed reading all of them, and the new one is actually really fun, too. Once you've settled on a final draft.
Somebody's got to put some art into this turd somewhere, really. If my reviews have any quality, I have to do it. Tiny tweet.
Now, I will say we normally are joined on this show by Josh Philpott and Richard Gray. Richard Gray said he would watch Twilight over his dead body, basically. So,
see, these men are cowards. They have no cojones.
Well, and Josh would have watched it. Josh has actually seen them all, and he was with us the last time, if you remember.
He was.
But he is, unfortunately, working today, so he couldn't join us. But I'm sure he would be here in spirit if he could.
Of course. I miss his presence.
So that's why they're not here. It's not that they've been like, you know, axed or something like that. They will be back. They'll be back next time.
Okay.
All right. So
For
the fun ones. Let's talk about this. And we will start our review, as we always would, with a little bit of a recap and synopses.
Mm-hmm. I'll let you do that.
And I always like to jump into IMDb for this, because the IMDb breakdowns are quite possibly the worst breakdowns of all time.
Mm-hmm. Nervous breakdowns. Perhaps.
Their breakdown basically says, Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 2, after the birth of Renesmee.
Now, so Renesmee.
Right there is a problem with the film. The Cullens gather other vampire clans in order to protect the child from false allegation that puts the family in front of the Volturi.
Nothing worse than a false alligator, I find.
No, false alligator. well, that's actually pretty accurate. Once. Directed by Bill Condon. Again, he directed the first one. Now, this is actually, I read something the other day that said, oh, now that they've broken up, I think they've gotten back together now, though, but now that the you know, what's the emo girl's name again? Kristen Stewart has broken up with Edward. Well, no, yeah, Edward. You know, will the love work in the last? But they shot them at the same time, guys. It's not like
that's right. But like Back to the Future. Topic.
Exactly. So it's not like they came back to shoot this one. You know? All right. So Bill Condon comes back and finishes his last part, written by Melissa Rosenberg and based, of course, on the novel by Stephanie, or as I like to say, Stephanie. Have you looked at the spelling of her name?
I've been contaminated by Mad Magazine many years ago. Referring to what was it that John Travolta film, and they give them different names, and they called the girl out of that Step Funny. So for the rest of my life, anybody called Stephanie is going to be Step Funny.
Well, I've never seen Stephanie spelt with an E in the middle of it. So
well, I never even saw that.
So her name is actually spelled Stephenie. Stephanie.
Stephanie.
So I have a problem with her name. But anyway, so Stephanie Mayer, and I've also heard her speak, and she would actually say that. Stephanie. She speaks like
God, very mature.
No, the funny thing is, here's a middle-aged, I shouldn't say that. She's about 30 or 40 years old, housewife, basically a closed-in Mormon housewife who basically has no world experience.
Yes.
Who's admitted to all this. I'm not making this up.
I know. I agree.
And, it shows. And she's actually already admitted that she's never seen or read a vampire story before. Everything is made up. It's her own lore, basically. Mm-hmm. And it shows. And the whole idea of the sparkling and the whole thing is based on a dream she had where a young boy was standing in the middle of a field sparkling like diamonds.
But why she ascribed him vampiric notions?
I don't know. Anyway, so that was the spot. And when you listen to her talk, she talks like a 15-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. We had a video clip at one point we played when we did New Moon. And it was like, wow, that's just odd. You know,
she is snapped frozen in time.
She is. She's a bored housewife who wanted to do something. And now, of course, she's a very rich bored housewife.
15 years old, which is what. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, so returning cast. Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner. Now I'm going to mispronounce his name because I've never quite understood. Peter Facinelli, is it?
I thought it was Facinelli.
Facinelli, yes, whatever. Yes. I mean, it's those Italian pronunciations, you know? Elizabeth Reeser, Ashley Green, Jackson Rathbone. These are all returning cast. Kellan Lutz, Nikki Reed, Billy Burke. Best member of the cast.
Oh, God, I love Billy. Oh.
Best member and most underused member of the cast.
Oh, he just brought it all up to life, didn't he?
He did. Now, we also have returning from Breaking Dawn Part 1, Maggie Grace, who I don't remember from Breaking Dawn Part 1 at all.
I believe you.
Yeah, I have no memory of her, but she is in the cast of Breaking Dawn Part 1. So, apparently, she was there somewhere, but Maggie Grace is so forgettable. Who knows? We don't have the entire cast list here because this cast list, it's a huge cast, but it goes on. We have the entire Volturi back again. So we've got Michael Sheen. We've got Dakota Fanning. The only person who didn't make another appearance, because we'll talk about this in the recap, but I don't remember her ever dying. I don't remember Victoria ever dying. I thought she just escaped again.
No, she did die. Remember? What's his name? Kilda, the wolf boy, I think.
Did he?
Yeah. No, Edward. Edward did.
I have no memory of her dying.
She went all smashy and everything.
Okay, we'll come back to that, too.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
We'll come back to that, too. All right, so we do have new members of the cast, and I'm not going to go through them all because we know no idea who they are.
That's right.
They are all unknowns, but we have...
And they will probably remain thus.
We have stereotype Amazon tribes people show up in full Amazon gear.
One of them
gear.
Looked a little bit like... Uma Thurman in blackface. Did you notice that?
A little bit. And the other thing is, was that family they get with the blondes with the girl with the shocky hands.
Yeah.
She looked like she was supposed to be somebody. And I'm reading the credits going, I don't know you, but I feel like she's from a band or something.
So much plastic surgery. She could be anybody she wanted to be. Witness relocation. That's what it is.
All right. And then the other thing is, if they never age and they never basically, and they just like heal, they never get hurt, how can they have plastic surgery?
That was pre being made.
Oh, was it pre being made?
Oh, absolutely.
But no, because when Bella got made, remember, she suddenly got a better body and everything, and her whole body changed and she got healthy?
I saw a thing about that. Can I talk about this yet?
In a second.
Okay, sorry.
My question is,
my question is,
if you had plastic surgery and then you became a vampire, wouldn't all the plastic surgery go away?
I would imagine it would.
That's what I would think. Anyway, we'll come back to it. All right, so that's that. Let's have a look at the trailer, or in this case, radio show. Let's have a listen to the trailer, and then we will come back and discuss this further.
I had a bad habit of underestimating you. Every obstacle you faced, I think you couldn't overcome it. And you just did.
I didn't expect you to seem so... you?
My time as a human was over. But I never felt more alive. I thought we would be safe forever. But forever isn't as long as I'd hoped.
I have to report a crime. The Collins, they've done something terrible.
Tilly thinks Renesmee is an immortal child.
She was born, not bitten. She grows every single day.
Oh my.
Creating an immortal child has long been outlawed and is met with the severest form of punishment. Death. What is it, Alice?
The Volturi. They're coming for us.
If enough people knew the truth, maybe we could convince the Volturi to listen.
Our search began, looking for vampires in the most remote corners of the world.
My family's in danger. I need your help.
Each with their own gift.
You are an amazing woman. We'll join you. Pax will fight. Never been afraid of vampires.
I'll never let anybody hurt you.
Can I just say that the trailers to these films have always been better than the films?
I wish my life was like their trailers.
Absolutely. I think if you compress these films down to 3-minute bites, they're actually better films.
They are. Absolutely.
All right. So let's do a spoiler-free review first. We'll talk about a few things, and then we're going to dive into a spoiler zone where we can really tear this thing apart.
All right.
Because there's a bunch of things I want to talk about. So I'll let you
start because I'm a little bit spoilery.
That's okay. So basically we have it's a direct continuation of part one, obviously. Renesmee has been born, yes. And so has Bella, kind of symbolic if you think about
that's
it.
That's right.
So they've been born. Renesmee is Renesmee, what is the most stupid name?
Well, I think the other one's name's Esme, so it's Renesmee.
So she's a redone Esme.
Yeah, right. Renee was the one mother and the other one was the other mother. And
right. Okay, well, we can try and justify it anyway. We like that. The bottom line is it's stupid.
Yeah,
we have Wolf Boy imprinting, and that brings all sorts of weird connotations to this.
Dubious.
Now, I believe in the book, I haven't read this, and if anybody wants to write in, feedback@filmactually.com, you can write in and tell us if we're wrong. Please, if you've read the book, correct us any way you want to, but we have to base this on the film.
Didn't read the book after the... It was book 1.5. I got halfway through the second one. I thought, I can't believe this.
Well, apparently in the book is a lot more graphic. And I think my understanding is from what people have said to me, the cesarean section that she actually did was literally Edward eating the baby out of her and stuff like that. So it's pretty rough stuff. And the whole imprinting thing has a much stronger sexual connotation in the book, which makes it really right? But in the film, luckily, they've kind of said, well, let's make him more of a protector.
I don't think luck had anything to do with it, David. I think that somebody said, I'm sorry. We can't go down this particular road.
Let's not hit the P word here
absolutely,
at this point.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Renesmee is, once she grows up a little bit, cute as a button. But can I just tell you that I found the CG baby oddly disturbing in so many ways. It was, because when it first came on screen, I went, there's something odd about that baby. And then I thought, that's very strange. And then as we're seeing it more and more and it's touching their face, I'm going, that is the weirdest thing I've ever seen, because it's obviously a CG creation. They're probably just holding some sort of plastic doll in their hand, and then they've created this weird amalgam of a toddler and a baby together.
Well, apparently they spent a lot of time on the eyes and the face, which they were working on. I think they didn't bother to follow through with, you know, actual the baby body, yeah. movements, something that would ring true. I don't know if you've looked into anything about the Uncanny Valley. And I don't think they bothered to do their homework there.
Hmm.
Especially about blinking at the appropriate time, because I remember reading a thing once that said if you don't blink within specific amounts of time, that it freaks people out that are observing you.
Yeah.
You know, so, well, they even
made mention of that in the film. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so what we have is we have the baby growing at a very quick rate. We have a character called, now, once again, if you've read the book, you can help us out here, because I'm not going back to rewatch the films, but I don't remember Maggie Grace's character in any previous film. And yet a big deal is made about the fact that Irina is coming home, and yet I don't remember this character at all. But Irina sees the baby doing weird things.
No, it was pretty. It was all poetical. It was floating and
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Things that a normal baby shouldn't be able to do, and like float.
Well, you obviously haven't had twins that bloody ADD and climb up things and destroy things. I'm sorry, David, but you're just not paying attention.
So she immediately reports back to the Volturi, who are the most comical Bela Lugosi takeoffs I've ever seen, which is the Michael Sheen characters and so forth, who immediately decide that she's an immortal baby, which is a forbidden crime, and therefore the Cullens must be destroyed. Or so it would seem. There is more to that subplot, which I don't know if that's spoilery or not, but there is more to that. But anyway, so they're going to come. So the Cullens decide they need witnesses to the fact that she is not an immortal baby. She is this special hybrid still an abomination, if you think about it in many ways.
Don't be racist, David. I'm sorry.
And they go running around telling everybody. And, of course, Renesmee has the magic ability of if she touches you, she can tell you her life story. And that's just pawned off as that's how she communicates, although she can speak quite fine. So who knows? But anyway, so, of course, all these people come.
Sorry, I'm shaking my head here. I'm going to hold my face in a minute.
So they all gather together and they're going to face off the Volturi, because they've decided that even though they have all these witnesses, the Volturi are probably still coming for war.
Well, they had ulterior motives based on the fact, I think, that they wish to capture certain people with certain kinds of
it's all about the abilities.
That's right.
And that brings us
collect
to
them.
Bella.
Yes.
As it turns out, Bella throughout all of the films has this ability that people can't read her.
We know what that means, don't we?
I'm sorry. I've never been able to read Kristen Stewart, so I don't know. I thought that was
nothing there.
I thought that was just an actress thing. I didn't realize that was a special ability. Anyway, so apparently when she becomes an undead.
Impenetrable, that's it.
She becomes impenetrable.
Yes.
Absolutely. She becomes a shield, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my first problem with this entire series of films. And this is not actually even just this film specifically, although we're going to address it to this film, which is that Stephanie Myers' writing is so shallow that everything comes so easily. So as an example, two examples I'll come off right off the top of my head, which is that when she's told that she's a shield and that nothing can touch her, so the electrostatic woman can't shock her.
It took her a few guys to get it up and running though.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying her directly.
Yes.
Because she's shielded. They say, maybe you could protect others by projecting your shield. And she goes,
yeah, but you see, she wouldn't think of that, because that would actually mean thinking about someone other than herself.
Yeah, absolutely, because she's self-centered. But what I love is the fact that she says, is that possible? Okay, wait for it. She says, is that possible? They say, with practice.
Mm-hmm.
On her first go, look, she shielded him. And it's like,
because she is just amazing.
But this is the problem I have, is everything about it. It's like, okay, we've already established that when you are turned into a vampire, we could establish this early on in the very first Twilight, because if you remember, what's his name? Alice's boyfriend was always looking like he was about to burst at the seams because he wanted to eat things all the time.
Yes, because he's got no self-control, you know. Yes. He had nothing to motivate him. He was...
Don't excuse this.
There are no excuses. That is sarcasm thickly.
So she basically gets turned into a vampire and immediately gets drawn because there's a human there. So she goes to attack him. But lo and behold, she has enough willpower to pull back.
Because she's special.
Because she's special. And this is the problem, though. Everything comes too easy. Every time they say something, in the next scene they're doing it. When she goes to talk to her father, which is minor spoils, but when she goes to talk to her father, they say, you need to move slower, you need to blink your eyes, you need to try and pretend to be more human.
Which is quick study, that's the whole thing.
Which she can't do. But then in the next scene, she's meeting her father, and she's perfectly fine.
Well, I thought... No, spoiler, I'll have to say.
Go for it.
Okay. What I thought was interesting, where they had said about, you know, that she had to, you know, move in a specific way. And he was all worded up about not to ask questions. And there was a moment, once again, this is Team Billy, Team Charlie.
Yeah, yeah.
And he cuddled her and the look went across his face and she's cold. And yeah. I thought, oh, man, you're good. You are so good. And it just was magic that he was able to convey that. I don't even know if he was officially – I bet he wasn't sanctioned.
Look, I will give Billy Burke – a lot of latitude on saying that a lot of Charlie came from him.
Mm-hmm.
He has been the best, most consistent character in this entire series.
I said that he is the only thing that is a touchstone that anyone can really relate to in this entire franchise.
Two of them. Him, best of all, yeah. And the second one was Alice.
Yes.
And she's been consistently good as Alice since the first film.
And she's had heaps of Dren to work with as well. So
she's working with some atrocious dialogue, and you sit there and go, she's making the best of what she can with what she's got.
Well, that's right. That's it. To be able to turn these, you know, sow's ear into the silk purses that they have.
So now, yeah, and then we look at it and go, now that this is over,
yeah.
We hope that Billy Burke gets a lot more juicier
stuff.
I saw
him in an old Fringe the other day,
yeah,
and I didn't recognise him, but he's Sean, and I thought, God, who's that bloke, you know? And I went and did a quick look, and oh, Billy, of course it is, you know? There was, yeah, it's just, it's you. Oh,
and
it's
we're
you.
Also waiting for, what's her name again? Ashley Green to really
She apparently
really
went
shine.
For the Bella role and didn't get it.
So she would have been better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there would have been some sort of, you would have actually cared about
it. There would have been a spark of life to Bella, which would have at least made you want to go on her journey.
That's right.
Whereas Kristen Stewart is a cold fish, quite frankly. I mean,
she's
there's nothing
a surly,
to it.
Surly, surly piece.
So we have now the big standoff. This leads to, of course, the conclusion, which is to the big dealing with the Volturi, and we won't spoil that until we go into spoilers. But I would like to just point out that this is a film that cannot maintain its own continuity, let alone anything else. Now, we have discussed all of the Twilight films in detail on this, and you've written about them as well. One of the cooler factors to Twilight that has actually happened over the series was this death of the vampire thing, where not only do they sparkle in the sunshine, but when you kill them, they shatter like glass.
It must be a porcelain thing, you know, like when they
maybe,
yeah, it goes through the kiln and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought, but as dorky as it was a really neat effect.
I liked it.
And
very
that battle
so.
Scene in Eclipse when they're fighting and people are shattering right, left,
that
and center.
That was deeply cool.
It was deeply cool.
And the sound was good as well. It wasn't even a mawkish sound. It was like, go, you know.
This time around, they decided that they don't break into glass anymore. Now their heads pop off like mannequins. And you sit there and go, that's something. What happened? You know, it's like, what happened here? Why did we suddenly decide that wasn't cool?
I think because they wanted... No, I don't know what they were thinking. I'm just postulating here. You know, to pop a head off like a cork out of a champagne bottle.
And it quite literally was like that.
I know. And
I was just waiting
for
the popping sound effect.
And I'm thinking, but maybe because they wanted to get more pop per buck. Maybe it had something to do with the special effects. Maybe because they really emphasized the beheading this time as opposed to the generalized death.
Oh, the beheading and burning.
That was their big featured deeds. Yeah. So maybe that was it to sort of say, we're going to chop your head off and then set fire to you just to make sure. So maybe the shattery bit wasn't going to cut it for that particular thing
and then also if they shattered into glass, you wouldn't have had the cool moment of the werewolf walking up with the hand in his mouth.
True. So if you had to have bits left over,
yeah,
for effect, you had to go with the new.
You had to go with the popping
absolutely,
off of the heads.
Absolutely.
All right, okay, solve that one.
I knew we could.
All right. So in all, this film, I mean, if you're in Twilight, you're in for a penny, in for a pound, basically.
Absolutely.
And you're going to have to see this film. as far as I'm concerned, this film, and I've said this before, which is the Twilight films, as much as I actually don't enjoy the Twilight films very much, they are actually, they do progressively actually get better technically. Mm. So technically, they're better shot. They're in some ways even better acted to a degree. The effects get better. The stories, in fact, get a little grander each time because they're trying to do bigger things.
Yeah, but I mean, also, you're looking at the fact that people have made a significant financial commitment.
Yeah.
And they've got to make these buggers go.
Yeah, and no matter what. The downside of this is, I think, the biggest fault with all of the Twilight films, including this one, is the source material. I think the source material is what leads this to basically being mediocre trash.
And yet it's there. You cannot deny its existence.
No, look, and what gets me is one mediocre trash takes off, another mediocre trash fails. And when I was a teenager, the big series of books that was going around everywhere and every girl was reading was Virginia Adams' Flowers in the Attic. And they were like
I never read that, thank God. Everybody else did, but
during
I never
the early 80s, the mid 80s, this was the thing to read. And Virginia Adams had died, of course, so...
Oh, that lends something to the...
To the mystique of it all. And so it was this huge thing, and they finally made a movie out of it, which actually starred Kirsty Swanson, the original Buffy, and the film just tanked. And you sit there and go, it's interesting. Those books were the twilight of their day.
But don't forget, too, some things need to live in your head.
Yeah.
Which is based on that other thing we were talking about before about your other...
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think when people try and bring things into reality that live in your head, like a book, you know, there has to be some special thing with either the director, the actors or whatever. I mean, all right, perfect example, going back into the past, MASH. Have you ever read the book, MASH?
Never read the book. I've seen the film and the TV series, but I've never read the book.
Don't bother. It's a dud.
It's a Heller book, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, it's got nothing there. And yet, and it was popular, and they created these brilliant movies and TV series out of it.
Another great example of that is, his name has gone out of my head, the guy who wrote The Short Timers, which was a book about Vietnam vets, a small book, and it was the basis of the film Full Metal Jacket.
Ah, right.
And Full Metal Jacket has so much more impact than The Short Timers. I mean, Short Timers is an okay book, but you sit there and go, what Kubrick did with it was, so as an adaptation, was so much more interesting than the original book.
Mm.
And we can see this throughout history.
Yes.
Jaws is a piece of pulp garbage.
Yes, but I liked it.
No, the book.
I've read it. I liked it.
The book
is... Mind you, I was very young and didn't have a great deal of discernment.
Reread it again. The book is terrible, all right? The book is paperback...
big for me when I was about 15 or whatever.
Well, of course. And then it was a big enough book that, you know, people were interested in
it. You
could
stand on it and be taller and everything.
But the book is considered by everyone, basically, as trash.
Mm-hmm.
But... Peter Benchley wrote a first draft of a screenplay, which was bought.
Mm-hmm.
It was then taken by Carl Gottlieb and Steven Spielberg and turned into Jaws. And Jaws the film is a masterpiece.
The Jaws the film is also a masterpiece because of what didn't happen. I saw a couple of very interesting things recently about how things persistently went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the people of Martha's Vineyard, I think it was, who actually populated the cast as well as the area.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their input, their actual creative input, while they're sitting around for that bloody shark to work, really brought it to the echelons that it achieved.
And not only that, the shark not working actually forced Spielberg to shoot around the shark.
And that was brilliant.
And what is considered to be one of the greatest things of Jaws is the fact that you don't see the shark until halfway through the
film. That's right. And that
was not
the
original intent.
And that brings us back to where we started, where some things just need to live in your head.
Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. And here we are drifting off into other films, which gives you an idea of how we feel about this film.
Ah, yes, but it shows us how erudite we are, so there you go.
Now, I was going to make one other observation before handing it over to you, which was, it's gone out of my head now. Give me a second. No, it's gone. All right. So I'm going to say to you that if you are not into Twilight, avoid, because you're probably looking at a film that has not a lot of merit to it on its own. because you need the previous films. You need this love affair. You need to care about these characters, which I don't. And I've seen all the other Twilight films, which is kind of scary. If you are at all curious or you are wanting to finish the story, then this is a must-see film. You kind of have to see this film to finish it all off. Overall, though, it's not a film I would run out and recommend to people.
Unless you're a young bloke who wants to get into the pants of a girl.
Then you take her.
You take her, or you start from the beginning and be able to speak, you know, knowledgeably, even if you're slagging it off, it doesn't matter. There are social reasons for seeing the film.
Also,
Don't read the book.
It would give hairstyles and looks a big deal. So if you're a young man trying to figure out what girls are into, you see Edward, you could lift your hair up high, pale your skin, and act aloof, and then they'll all fall for you.
But the fashions are good. I have to say the fashions are good. Really? The styling. No. I rescind that. I think if you want to look at later styles, if you want to look at, you know, house styles.
And see what's latest in the indie rock scene.
Absolutely. No, there are a lot of positive aspects to it. No, it is worth seeing. But don't, you know.
I will stand by the...
Check your brain at the door. That's it.
I will stand by that I still think, and even though it's better in this film in the sense that it's not quite so overt, it was worse in the first three films. But I will say that I think Bella is quite possibly the worst female role model I've ever seen put on screen and sets back the women's movement 30 years.
I can't disagree with that. I'm just racking my brain to see if there's anyone worse, but I don't think there's that. She wins.
Yeah, she wins. I mean, the thing is, the fact that she's all about, I mean, especially, this goes back to Breaking Dawn Part 1. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it was analogous to beating your woman, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, it's okay, he didn't mean it, you know? Luckily in this film, now that she's got power...
And she beats every... Sorry.
Yeah. Now that she's got power, she's not quite as... It's okay, darling. You know, it's like she's kind of his equal now. So it's taken us five films to get there, but now we're kind of, you know... At that position where, although they're still not quite equal, you notice that he's the one that instigates sex. He's the one that takes her clothes off. He's the one that does, you know, so it's like she's still subservient to him.
Yes.
In fact, if you want to draw the analogy further, he made her.
He did.
So, you know, it's
Couldn't let her die. Couldn't let her die. Just look after that kid on his own. No, he's too gutless. Gutless. No, he made her.
So, in fact, he is her master.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Okay, Robin, take it away. What did you think?
What did I think of it? Oh God, the fashions, the everything. The music wasn't bad. When can we do spoilers?
We're going to go into spoilers just a minute. I just want to just give the people a quick review about what you thought of the film and whether they should go see it, and then we're going to go spoilers and tear this piece of crap.
I think
apart.
I've inserted pretty well what I want to say, just as little underscores. But look, it's not worth it. It's not fun. Oh, there's a few jokes.
There's a poster capture for you. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, hello.
Hey, we have a visitor.
No, it's really, unless you start at the beginning, it's like a set of action figures. You need to complete the set if you're going to, you know, start at the beginning, finish, you know, finish as you intend to start. Otherwise, don't start. It's like smoking. You know, if you don't want to have to give it up, don't start at the first place.
There you go.
That's it.
All right, let's go into a spoiler zone. As usual, we have this to play. So we will play this, and just remember that in our show notes will be the time codes of the spoiler zone so that you can actually skip this part if you don't want to hear about the internal workings of this movie. And we will come back after the spoiler zone and talk a little bit about the series in a whole, although we've kind of done that as well. But we'll come back and kind of wrap this all up. But here is the spoiler zone. And now that we're in our special secret chamber, everything from this point onwards is spoiler. So once again, last warning, if you don't want to hear about the secrets of the film, it's not like there's a big mystery here. But
It got me. It made me go.
I actually want to just start this off by saying that I was so pissed off at the Dallas moment at the end of this film. I thought, what a complete anticlimax.
Well, I'd heard after I read about it afterwards, doing my research, that she didn't want anyone, you know, to die.
Of course she didn't.
Because she's nice.
Big old wuss. Anyway, so what we're alluding to, of course, is the fact that Alice comes up and says, I can show you why, proof positive this won't get out. what's his name, the Volturi leader.
Arrow.
Touches her hand, sees the future, and then basically declares war on the Cullens, and all hell ensues. And there's a fantastic battle scene.
It was great.
We've got people's heads being ripped off. We've got bodies being burned. We've got Bella shielding people and stopping Dakota Fanning. And I thought it was just wonderful. I mean, we had dogs attacking.
It was great. I thought it was, oh, thank God, let rip. It's happening. It's moving.
And we actually have peril.
That's right.
You know, it's something actually happening in this
thing,
finally.
And it was compelling things. I got a bit sad. Do you know I shed a little tear?
Wait, which one? Which character made you shed the tear?
The first one?
Yeah.
The first one
yeah.
did? I
Daddy
thought,
Cullen?
No. Yeah. No. And
what's Daddy Cullen's name again? Daddy's Cullen? Carlisle.
Yes. The blonde Tom Cruise.
with too much plastic surgery.
Yes. No, I thought, no. So I thought for that brief shining moment, I was in that moment. I was engaged. I was there. I was actually, oh, you got me. You got me. I'm here. People are dying. Ah.
Look, I thought there is finally something happening in five films. Even though we had a battle scene in an eclipse, because it turned into glass shards, there was never any danger.
Yes,
in
but
it.
Who had, you know, clean up an aisle six, come and take care of that.
Exactly. This, there felt like danger. And we had special powers. We had the guy making the big chasm in the middle of the snowfields. And we had Electro Woman doing her bit. And we had, you know, it was awesome.
It was. I loved it.
We had
this, I actively loved that bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it suddenly, right at the big crux of it, Arrow gets his head ripped off and he sees the fire coming in and suddenly, bang, we're back. And she goes, this is what would happen if you pursued this. And you go, it's a Dallas moment. It was all a dream.
Yes, but the thing was, if you want to be a little bit analytical, he didn't give a shit until his own head got ripped off.
That's true.
He didn't pull the plug. Actually, it's more like a brainstorm moment, really, if you think about that.
He knew it was going to be his death.
That's right, yes. So he was very selfish. It was all right for everybody else to die until it got to be him. And he thought, no, I'm not going down that road.
Yeah.
So that was it. So, yes.
So I felt like it was an anticlimactic moment. You sit there going, oh, we were just there. We were that close.
We were gypped.
We were gypped. We were that close to it actually being, to actually having
a grown up movie.
To having stakes.
That's right.
You know, forgive the pun. No, no. To having stakes, to actually having something that matters.
Yes.
You know?
I agree.
And to making a difference. And I was thinking, I'm watching this battle going, does this mean the Cullens are going to be the next Volturi? Does this mean that they're going to take over? They're going to be like in charge
now,
of
now. That was a silly thought because after all, this was the last movie.
Yeah, but that's how it could have ended with them in the robes on the throne.
Oh, yeah, I suppose so.
And you see, they're going, what's her name again? Renesmee.
She could be their queen.
Could have been their queen because she was this hybrid character and blah,
that's
blah,
right.
But then they had to spoil that by walking in the Native American Indian.
He was Brazilian. Brazilian, didn't he?
In costume. I love the fact that we had to get so stereotyped that when the women from the Amazon turned up, they were in full Amazon
and I like the little black things over their eyes. That was very...
In the snow.
There were significant amounts of snow. And,
I love the fact that the hybrid who turns up to say that everything's going to be okay because he is one, killed his mother, effectively.
I know, he turned his auntie. He made his auntie. Well,
It wasn't his mother, it was his auntie, that's right.
No, but the thing was, his mother died in childbirth.
That's right.
And then he's there with his auntie, who is a vampire.
That's
and
right.
he turned her.
Well, that's right, because he goes, I was outliving her, then I made her.
That's right.
And it's like, oh, thank you.
Yeah. you know? Well, she seemed happy in the role, which is once, hey, let's get back to the subservience thing again.
There you go. Once again,
yes,
male domination.
Women are there to serve.
Now, a lot of that, and I don't mean this to be a horrible stereotype, but a lot of that comes from Stephanie Meyer's background. I mean, mm-hmm. she is from the Church of LDS. She is a devout Mormon,
mm-hmm.
and she comes from a very devout Mormon background.
Mm.
And so there is a certain amount of subservience to the women, and they're the homekeeper, the homemakers, and, you know, she's raised her children, and she was a bored housewife when she read this. We've talked about this before.
Mm.
So that is going to reflect in her writing. But I think it's kind of scary.
She never grew.
Exactly.
I mean, all right, if you're going back to another female writer, you've got your J.K. Rowling. She grew.
Was a single mother.
That's right.
You know?
And she actually grew. Her writing style improved from the beginning.
Mm.
You know, there was a journey.
To be fair, though, she was already a fairly good writer when she started. First Harry Potter is actually a very well-written book.
That's right. That's right. But, I mean, the thing is, well, you're assuming intelligence, really, aren't you?
Bingo! Yes. All right. Well, we shouldn't disparage her intelligence. We don't actually know what her IQ is, but we can go by what we've seen of her, what we've heard of her, what the interviews we've heard with her, and, of course, the proof is in the pudding. The proof is actually in the writing, and the writing is what we have. Now, this is produced by her, so even though she didn't write the screenplay, she has a strong hand.
That's right.
And everything's going on. And
well, can you tell me about those two blokes?
Which two blokes?
You know, the ones that had their castles burnt down.
Oh, okay. So,
what's your take on them?
What were their names? Vladimir and something.
Oh, I don't know. There was the blondie and the dark.
They're basically
one.
Dracula.
So, I know that. So, but I'm saying, hello, a little bit gay there.
Just a little bit. And I think you wrote in your report as well. You also had your doubts about the Amazonian women.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, because everybody paired off in this. You were right. Yeah. Everybody was in pairs. Mm-hmm. So if they're in pairs, we have to assume that. Vladimir looked a little bit like Andy Warhol to start with, so there was probably something experimental going on there.
I'd say so. But after being around the block a couple of times,
and he did make mention of the fact that they had stayed still so long that they started to petrify. So does that?
I have to confess here, there was a few paths,
and they were actually quite bitchy about the fact that they didn't go into the fight at the end. It's like
that's right. But I lost focus a couple of times. I'm there focusing. And they're talking and people are talking and I'm thinking, I don't know what you're saying.
And that's actually one of the problems with Breaking Dawn as well. Breaking Dawn was broken over two films. It should never have been broken.
Oh, that was greed. They were trying to do a Deathly Hallows.
Yep. But it should never have been broken over two films. There wasn't enough material.
No.
So what we end up with in both films is lots of talking and a climax. And then in the second film is lots of talking and a climax. And so what we needed was we needed to compress all that talking and we could have actually had
climax. Get on with it. Don't speak. Yeah. You know, that's what needed to happen. And there were so many drawn out bits that just didn't make sense. And I'm thinking, why are you walking slowly?
You wouldn't be referring to a campfire scene, would you?
The campfire scene.
I was waiting for row, row, row your boat at one point.
Oh, kumbaya, kumbaya. And, you know, the walking through the
And can snow. I ask, mm-hmm. if there are a bunch of vampires who can stand around in the snow in their Amazonian jungle gear, mm-hmm. why do they need a campfire?
Because it's fun.
But they don't need warmth.
Light? No, they don't need that.
They don't need that either. They're creatures of the night.
Oh, the little girl. Was she the little girl. She needed to be able to see.
Oh, was she there?
I don't know.
I think that she was in bed, wasn't she? And if she wasn't, that's bad parenting. I'm sorry.
I know. It's just...
and my other question was, what happened to all the wolves? Now, I know in this film, and I love the fact that they try and justify it by saying, there are so many more vampires, more wolves spontaneously happen. I love the way you described it as poppadoms in a microwave. I think that is just beautiful.
I laughed on that one. I laughed at my own joke.
I think that's beautiful because it's so true. The kids are running along. They're just popping and turning into wolves. But when we actually get the climactic battle at the end, there's only like...
There was no battle. Yeah, like, you see, you're making this... They were traveling through. I had to travel through the... thing. It was like a toll exacted, I would imagine, that as soon as a vampire went through the Quileute territory, boink, boink, that was it.
But what happened to all the originals?
One popped in. What was his name? Embry. He turned up.
Is that the one that got knocked against a tree at one point?
Remember how there was the factions and just Jacob and Seth and Leah. Oh my God, why do I even know their names? And then...
We've invested far too much time on this film.
Not too much about it. But then there was a handshaking moment at one stage with the original pack.
Right.
I think. And I thought, God, he got fat. was it Sam Yulee or something his name was?
Right.
And there was handshaking. So I think it was taken as read that everybody was on the same side because this other lot were coming.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is when this battle finally, or when they were preparing for this battle and they're lined up on the snow, there's only like a dozen wolves there. And you sit there and go, if we just popped all these new wolves into existence, we already had more than that. Because if you remember the Battle of the Eclipse, there was tons of them, right?
Maybe they ran out of... Special effects.
Ran out of budget.
I really like that one that had the one light eye, one dark eye. He was cute.
Yeah.
That was nice. I stopped counting. I really did because it was like, you know, as I said, there was all the different angles and everything. And I'm thinking something happened, please.
So what we ended up with was a bunch of juvenile wolves who just kept falling over each other.
Yes.
And like Jacob. That was about it.
But I thought the other bloke was there. Or maybe he was just agreeing not to rip everybody's head off because there was goodies.
Well, he said they've all agreed not to hunt in our territory.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, or so. Once again, it's they are so inconsistent with the lore
What's Katrina called? Internal logic.
There was no internal logic. That's the problem.
That's right. That's exactly right.
They kept
right.
changing the rules film by film.
Well, you know, we were talking about rules before. There was a thing I was thinking about with the whole hunger thing, the hunger.
Yeah. This is the Tony Scott film.
David Bowie.
Yeah.
Yep. And I was thinking about...
Such a good film. Go out and see that.
Yes. Oh, well, I've seen it.
No, I'm talking to the audience. Oh, go see that instead of this.
And the soundtrack, lots of cello.
And lesbian sex.
And swimming pools. And a very, very skinny Susan Sarandon. But I was thinking there was aspects of that, you know, where they were wafting around looking, you know, with all the lovely, what do you call it? Houses and things like that, you know, and then there was the classical music and the, you know, improving oneself and the artifacts and everything. I wonder if there, to me, there was a bit of a nod to that, you know, and then...
That's assuming that Stephanie Meyer or anybody had seen The Hunger, though.
One would think that at least some of the producers had seen it.
Well, Bill Condon might have. He's a director, so...
Yeah, well, that actually looked nice. But the posing around was just...
There was a lot of tableau work in this. There was a lot of everybody stand, look cool. You know?
I don't think it was cool. It was looking content. It was looking smug.
It looked like a fashion catalogue.
It did. It did. It really did. And I didn't get... Well, I mean, even the ones that were supposedly a little bit ratty looking still looked fantastic.
Well, because they had designer stubble.
That's right. Absolutely. And I thought all the contact lenses, the whole thing, it was just... It was a bit like the Hobbit feet, I think, you know. How many contact lenses had they gone through?
How many pointy ears and feet can you go through?
Oh, I know. But and, of course, there was that other thing we were talking about. Katrina had said to me with the Charlie business, bringing back to Charlie. Now, at the last film, she was supposed to be dying and they brought her back.
Yep.
And then she was dying and Charlie was being kept at arm's length.
Well, because remember, she was supposed to be in Brazil or something like that.
Yeah, and then they brought her back. I think there was some note that she had actually come back and Charlie was being kept at arm's length.
Right.
And then they were going to tell him that she died.
That's right.
But then she got better. And then Katrina said, well, where was the body? How was he going to bury the body? What was going to happen with that?
Well, the idea was they were going to tell him that she... No, wait a minute. Okay. If I remember correctly, because there's actually a line in this film mm-hmm. where... When Jacob goes and does the tattletale stuff.
Yeah, but the thing was before that
he actually says she's back. So he actually says
she's back. He didn't know before that.
No. So she was, remember, because in the last film, this is going from memory, I haven't re-seen it, but in the last film, Carlisle had spoken to the father saying that she's with a specialist, blah, 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 in Brazil or whatever it was.
Mm.
And then the idea was they were going to say she died. And then the Cullens would all disappear. Mm-hmm. For a couple of decades mm-hmm. while mm-hmm. Charlie lives out his life and then they could come back, mm-hmm. right? Now, even though she was back and living with the Cullens, he still thought she was away because
right.
she was sick.
They hadn't officially told her she was dead.
That's
was,
right. Yes. And so the idea was they were then going to go and say she died.
Right.
Which at that point is when Kristen Stewart said, we'll tell him tomorrow, remember? And that's yes. when Jacob ran that's off right. and said, look at my pecs.
Yes.
And look at my chest because aren't I hot? And turn into a wolf and spoil the whole thing, right? And
I don't think that was spoiling.
I just, once again, Billy Burke, love his reaction to just, Jacob taking his clothes
just,
off. It's like,
it was gorgeous. It was just gorgeous. And the thing is that he, you know, and that's what Katrina said, well, how did they get from there to there? Well, if she got better, she was dying, I said, I don't know. It's a bit like, you know, the joke about grandma on the roof, you know, she grandma's up on the roof. I thought maybe, you know, Bella's up on the roof.
Bella's on the roof.
Yes. So I'd lost that particular plot point at that time, but
and I was trying to keep that in mind because they made a big deal about this in the last film about
I'm glad you were paying attention.
The way that they had to deal with the father because he couldn't know that she was still alive. I love the fact that when they do decide that she's going to meet the father after Jacob, you know, whipped his chest out, that
showed him his furry bits.
I love the fact that the Cullens just happen to have contact lenses in the house.
Yes.
Well, change the color of your eyes and you've got to walk this way and you've got to blink.
No, Alice would have known.
Oh, she would have seen it. That's right.
Yes, because, I mean, she'd prepped the house.
Now, you've got to ask yourself, if she has seen so much of the future, why does anything still surprise her? I mean, that scene where she drops the vase, you go, why
No,
would
no, I... because the decision was being made. Decisions had to be made. Like,
right.
So I'm assuming there's some free will and then you can change your mind or not. It's a bit like, you know, that's locked in now, Eddie, you know. So but
And have we noticed that this is not the first time that Alice has disappeared? I think in one of the previous films, she disappeared for a while.
Yes, but she goes off to be tricky, you see, and she can't tell anybody because then that'd be telling because she can sort of see other people.
Future,
or something or other. Oh, God, I don't know. I don't know.
Once again, you're looking for logic in what is effectively a, not to coin a phrase of a show that we might be doing soon, but it is a logic vacuum.
It really is. Look, and I mean, the other thing too, with that part where Bella went to see the lawyer and...
Once again, a scene that has no bearing or relevance.
There was nothing to
anything leading up to that. It was
look, the lawyer sent us this. Here's the tickets. They're going to have to rack off. You know, that's fine. But the whole they're having food or whatever, and he obviously knew that they were vampires or something. So the secret's already out there. So I mean, this whole I've got to protect our secret. You know,
everybody for a secret, it's a very well known secret.
Well, that's right. Absolutely,
everybody seems to know this secret. So. Anyway. All right, so we've got the whole thing's a dream sequence. So it was a waste of time.
The fashions were nice.
Fashions. I also want to point out that once again, not being able to hold their own internal continuity.
Yes.
The internal continuity is a complete washout. We've talked about the breaking into glass, mm-hmm. and now they're ripping heads off.
Mm-hmm. They didn't even spit down their neck.
Now, in this series of films, mm-hmm. we have established from day one
mm-hmm.
that if they are in direct sunlight, they sparkle like diamonds.
That's correct.
Which is so stupid. But they do this.
Yes,
all right?
Yes.
Riddle me this, Robin.
Yes, yes. I think you've thought about this even more than I have, but go on.
The very last scene of this film, they're back in the fucking flower bed.
Magic meadow.
The magic meadow. In direct sunlight. There's a pool of sunlight the flowers, and neither of them are sparkling.
Because obviously the special effects people had just totally lost interest at that point.
Or they had gone home. They went, another, oh, fuck it. so why weren't they sparkling in the last scene? Once again, internal continuity.
Stupid as.
If it had been an overcast day and they were in the flowers, okay. But
wouldn't be in that because you had to be all sparkly and everything.
Well, that's right. And the whole idea was that they were laying in the flowers, which is a returning motif from a previous film, laying in the flowers in the sun and the sparkles. And he sparkled last time, but this time around...
She had a sparkle once in this, too.
Yeah, and that's because she walked into the torchlight.
That's
one,
right.
The one beam of sunlight coming through.
It's a bit like
the old
X-Files torches. Just,
and it's almost like she... purposely walked into the beam of light. She's like, come on, I want to sparkle. Come on, sparkle
me. Catch me. Look, I think that, they had lost interest. And I mean, what I thought was just so fabulous, and I mean this, my tongue plays firmly in my cheek, was the part about the book. The book at the end.
Yeah, look. And
with the flicky pages.
The flicky pages and the
little highlight bits, you know, like that was underlined, highlighted. You know, I thought,
to give it credit, I think it had a great end title sequence. I thought the
beginning was fabulous.
It was almost the same as part one, though, because remember that's a Bill Condon thing. He's got all the blood patterns and the weird,
ice and everything. Yeah. No, I thought it was absolutely stunning.
That was a returning motif. Not from the first Twilight, from the first Breaking Dawn.
I'll have to have a look at that.
So, first Breaking Dawn has kind of a similar opening, but I love the fact that
it was beautiful.
They ended this with the entire cast of the entire series.
Absolutely. I think that could have been a little bit of padding as well, but there you go, to get your 155 minutes worth or whatever it was.
How long was this film in the end?
Something with 55, so I think it was 155 minutes.
155? Was it really
Just check for
really
me because
that long?
I saw that. I thought, oh my God, how am I going to.
I will say that if it was that long, it actually moves at a fairly brisk pace because. 115 minutes.
15. I knew there were five. See, I'm what do you call it?
I'd say 155 like, minutes. This film must have been better than I thought. I didn't feel like 155 minutes. But I will say that the end credits was a really, really nice send-off, basically. Yeah.
No, it was stunning. It was beautiful. I mean, the thing is, if you were deaf, it probably was a good movie, which I don't know if that's it.
although I will have to say
you might have to edit that out.
Leave it. I was about to say if you were deaf though, you would have missed the most beautifully ironic moment of the entire film though.
What?
Which was the end credits start, the beautiful sequence of the end credits, and the first line out of the song, the singer starts to sing.
Yes.
The first line, I was trying to find the song actually to play it on the show.
1,000 Years or something, wasn't it?
The first line is, "Where did all the time go?" And I just went,
Oh, yeah. That's exactly how I feel.
Well, I mean, it's just... I know I'm not supposed to give away what I've said here, but I actually think that they have nailed the adolescent girl's psyche. I really thought, with that last little splonge of thoughts, harking back to my own memories of the time, and you were mooning over some pop star or whatever it was that you were in love with, and there was these little fantasies you'd have about what it'd be like, and people would be looking at you, and everything would be perfect and everything, and you're the centre of the world, of this world. And I actually think without, you know, there was no cohesion, there's no self-responsibility, it was, you know, self anything other than it's just you and some bloke, or in this case there was several blokes, yeah, you know, hovering around, and you are the son of this constellation, and it's just there. It is there. They've actually got it. No sense, no reason, just you, you know, and everyone adores you and worships, and you're perfect. You'll never get old. No hurty bits. And even the baby, in this fantasy baby.
Ideal baby, never cries.
Never cries, is perfect. So I want to tell you something. There you go. Sorry, I'm just attacking Nikki here. you know, and something, mom, it's the...
Yeah. Oh, man, wouldn't you like it if all communication could be that easy? Just touch your face.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it says, get out of my face.
touching me.
So you've got this perfect, beautiful baby. You've got this perfect... you know, and it's not a messy little baby for terribly long, you know, and everyone's oogie boogieing around it, you know, and it's just, it is a perfect scenario. It really, really is. And the thing is, you know, she palms the baby off. The baby's only a baby for 5 minutes, and then voila, you know, I'll just get on with the rest of my life and chow down on nasty pussycats.
Now, I would like to make mention at this point in time, I need to right a wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the wrong I'm going to right, mm-hmm, is... I think an actress was completely stooged in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And the actress I want to mention is Christy Burke. Now, Christy Burke had about 15 seconds of screen time in this film. And she was not credited. And that was Renesmee as a grown woman on the beach. And you sit there and go... You look through the credits, and they actually list her at 4, at 5. You know, they literally list all the ages. They don't list her. And all I can think is she probably thought this was her big moment as an actress.
She was pretty, though.
She was pretty. And she probably went, I'm in a Twilight film. This is going to be the launch of my career. And she's not even credited in the credits.
That is crook.
You know? It's like you sit there and go, that is just, and even in IMDb, it says uncredited. You know, it's like, that's just wrong.
It is cruel, cruel fate. I just want to talk about one thing about, though, with Renesmee and her incredible beauty. I was actually wondering at some stage whether or not they CGI'd her eyes to be bigger, you know, a bit like those manga
Surprise me. There was something odd about her the entire film.
But the thing that I saw...
Could be the wig that they put on her.
Possibly.
As well.
The hair was fabulous. But the thing that I saw recently, I was in Japan or somewhere, and this bloke, his man and woman got married, and she had a baby, and the baby was really, really ugly. And he divorced her because apparently she'd had significant quantities of plastic surgery to enhance her looks and thereby ensnare him.
So
in her
the baby was taking the original looks.
That's right. And he said, well, I'm sorry, but you got me in on the wrong premise here. So take you and your prefabricated you and your ugly baby and away with you. And I was thinking about that, you know, because of the incredible beauty of this baby. And I thought, gee, I wonder if people are going to think about, you know, giving their kids plastic surgery and all this sort of stuff. I know, but it just was an idle thought.
Although, you know what?
I'm just showing you what's in my brain.
It wouldn't surprise me if people have thought about that, but it's probably laws about it. That's the thing. You know?
Oh,
and
my God.
I think it would be close to child abuse.
It would. But the thing is, what sort of vibe would this child be living in to sort of think, well, you know, I'm ugly and, you know, and therefore I'm going to, mum and dad don't accept me. And, but this black, I saw it. I have to find that article. You'll love it. I'm divorcing you because you're ugly. You tricked me and you gave me an ugly baby.
All right. So do we have any more spoilers?
How can you spoil rotten eggs?
Well, that's kind of how I feel. But do we have anything else we want to say before we take ourselves out of the spoiler zone?
I'm just looking through here.
Because we are going to continue talking, but I want to know if we can take ourselves out of spoilers.
What did you think about the music?
Look, I actually thought...
The Kamina Barana part I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, I didn't actually mind that. I thought that was actually kind of a little bit of a return because we discussed prior to this show going on, Carter Burwell is a very interesting composer in my eyes.
Yes, he does.
He does some very interesting stuff. And he, for me, my... biggest contact with Carter Burwell, of course, was he's done a vast majority of the Coen Brothers films.
Mm-hmm. And you were talking about True Grit recently.
Yeah, and he's does other films as well, but that's a vast majority of stuff with the Coens. And he did, and quite frankly, in the review back in 2008, this is before we knew each other, but way back in 2008 when we reviewed the original Twilight, I actually said
that my sister went for that one. I went with her. She did the original Twilight, the first one.
No, she came in on New Moon.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, right, yeah, okay. No. So the original Twilight review in 2008 was me and Mirren.
And
we reviewed it, and I think the episode, if you want to go back and look for it, is a Geek Action episode, and I think it's called Cheer Up Emo Girl.
Okay.
So, because it was the whole thing. And look, and we'll come back to them when we talk about Twilight, but she is just so dead inside. Anyway, I can't keep. But you know, Carter Burwell. Let's just go back to Carter Burwell for a minute. Right. Carter Burwell's score, not the music. When people, and we've got to be very clear.
I have one of the Twilight scores because it's been with my little obsession with cellos and stuff.
Well, there's Twilight. They've actually released a soundtrack album and a score for every Twilight film.
Well, the score isn't out until tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, so I know I'll be getting it because I've got all the scores for all the Twilights. I've skipped most of the albums because they're just best of albums.
Oh, they're not too bad, though. There's a couple of good ones, but you know what's really annoying, if I can say that, that place that starts with I? They make you buy the whole album. You can't buy individual songs.
Oh, they've locked it off to album only.
Album only.
Wow, that's interesting.
And greedy.
I kind of look at best of albums because that's effectively what they are. They're compilations. I look at soundtrack albums with certain exceptions. Pulp Fiction is a great certain exception. There's a certain cohesion to that album.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though it is a collection of songs, but it's because of the collection that it is. On the most part, though, these soundtrack albums where they just collect all the songs, or my favorites are the ones that songs from or inspired by, which means that they're not even songs that appear but
it's
still.
It's just a money getting
they're
exercise.
A step up from those compilation albums that come out once a year, hits of the 84.
Fresh summer hits.
Yeah.
Yes, but I must confess that I really, really like Bon Iver now from watching that.
Which song was his?
It was Rosalind, and it was in the one where Edward racked off. That was the second one.
Oh, the second one, New Moon.
Yeah. And I'm not singing it for you.
No, don't. Please. I won't. Anyway, so Carter Burwell.
You've got to sing up here if you're singing Bon Iver.
So Carter Burwell scored the very first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he was replaced because everyone has been directed.
Well, everyone's like you know, musical chairs, director's chairs, score chairs.
Well, exactly. Every film has been directed by a different person. And so those directors obviously bring in their composers to who they feel they work with, basically. Mm-hmm. So we've had soundtracks by Alexander Desplat. We've had soundtracks by, the name is going out of my head. But anyway, Carter Burwell has come back and has done the break.
Did he do the one with the theme, what was the name? God, isn't it terrible? Kristen Stewart, what's the Bella's theme? Did he actually write that?
It
was the piece that Robert Pattinson played, actually played, real life played. And he also sang in the first one too, you know.
Yes, he did. Yes. That's right.
And
I've actually got album listings here. Give me 1 second. I will find these for you. Keep vamping here.
That's all right. No, because he sang. I've listened to a couple of his things because they've got them on YouTube.
Hold that thought for 1 second. We're going to take ourselves out of the spoiler zone because this is stuff that other people might want.
Okay. All right.
Sorry about that. We got kind of lost down there for a while.
We're just so self-absorbed. We're learning our best self-absorption and self-fascination from Bella.
Has taught us everything.
Everything
absolutely.
We ever needed to know.
All right. So I'm just going to fire up here. I actually have the albums and we'll just fire up the track that you're talking about. We've been in the spoiler zone for those who are just joining us again now, talking about the music of Twilight. We got kind of down a rabbit hole in the spoiler zone, and we thought we'd better bring it out here.
No, it was an intellectual plateau. There was no holes. we were sparkling in the sunlight.
Oh, come on. It was a rabbit hole. You know it was.
it was an abyss.
We fell down at Lock, Stock, and Barrel. Okay, so you're looking at for Bella's theme. Bella's Lullaby? Would that be the one?
That would be the one.
This one?
Yep.
Hang on. Should sound something like, if my volume is up. This one? That's Bella's Lullaby from the first film. The one that you might be thinking of.
So what was was where he was playing. He actually played it in the.
It was Rosalind, I Belong to You. Bella's Dreams from New Moon.
That's
this one.
That little riff then was the one that.
That's the one you're thinking of.
Yeah, and Edward played it for her on the piano. He wrote it just for her.
All right, let's have a look. So Bella's Lullaby. We'll go back to that one.
Yeah.
And you say skip into it a little bit, yeah.
Because he was playing the piano. Yeah, that's
the one.
That's the line of it. Yeah, that's the one. So did he write that?
Yeah, it's Carter Burwell.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, that's Carter Burwell. Definitely. All right, so Carter Burwell wrote the original. Carter Burwell wrote...
he does a lot of sharps and flats, the old Carter Burwell.
He does. So the second film was Alexandra Desplat,
mm-hmm.
and Eclipse was Howard Shore, who did Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And then, of course, Carter Burwell has returned for this one. And I got to tell you, I was actually a little disappointed. When I saw Carter Burwell's name on it, I went, yay, because I really liked the score to the first one. Lots of cellos, as you said. It's got that really kind of gothic feel.
And I think that's really needed. I mean, it's got to have some sort of branding, hasn't it, really?
It does. And I thought...
Because it's so wishy-washy, the rest of it.
Because we've kind of moved away from what the theme of the original film was, which was kind of like, ooh, they're vampires. Mm. You know, now that we're all vampires, I guess that mystery is taken out of it. So that doesn't quite have that same... impact anymore. And I mean, we open the show and we'll close the show with that Twilight theme, which is actually on the original soundtrack. It's called I Know What You Are.
I really like that. Yeah. I actually really like that. And as you say, once again, you get into the whole trailers for it, you think, oh, this is going to be so
good. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know? And we just kind of lost the flavor. And I was a bit disappointed because I thought Carter Burwell would have brought that flavor back, but he didn't.
Some of it was a bit derivative, wasn't it, really?
It was. And that would have been, as you say, Carmina Burana riffs and stuff like that. And you kind of go, yeah, it's like your heart's not in this. But once again, he's under the direction of a different director. So,
possibly. And maybe Stephanie was standing on his coattails again. Who knows?
Well, who knows? I mean, that's the problem.
I just thought, you know, a couple of times it just came so close to something... Ooh, interesting. And then it was like yanked back sort of thing. And that to me, there was no courage.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit before we finish up today, because we are going a little bit long. Let's just talk a little bit about our journey through these films. All right. It's been what?
2008.
Four years.
Well, it said 2008 was a bumpy year for poo was what I wrote in my first one.
So we're talking about 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 5 years, actually. Mm-hmm. So we're 5 years into this thing. We started broadcasting Geek Actually way back then. This before it was even called Film Actually. It was just the Geek Actually show way back in 2008. And Twilight was literally within our first 20, 30 episodes. So it was way back. So we kind of have gone all the way back. And the shows have ranged from one-on-one between Mirren and myself to huge bumper shows like when New Moon came out. I think we had a panel of about 8 people or something, which Katrina was part of.
Yes.
Back to just 2 people talking about this whole thing. So it's kind of come full circle.
It's also the stayers, the ones that have actually got...
I actually, when David Kaziki was one of our regular co-hosts back then, I had to drag him physically to see New Moon because he really didn't want to see it. And I kept saying to him, you don't understand. It's not just about not wanting to see the film. I can understand.
It's called taking one for the team.
Well, it's looking at what is currently the thing in cinema. You know what I mean?
That's right.
The cultural phenomenon.
That's what you were talking before about the flowers in the attic business. And I think it's important to have the finger on the pulse of what's happening because it is a snapshot of the times.
Mm.
And you look back years later and think, what were they thinking?
When we saw Twilight, way back in 2008, Mirren and I went to see an industry screening of Twilight. So we saw it in a very little screening room with a bunch of hardened critics, and some of them brought their teenagers. And sitting right beside us was obviously a journalist who had brought their, I think she was like 13 or 14 year old daughter.
That's the critical age,
I think. And we sat there, and Mirren and I were sniggering the entire film because we thought this was the most stupid
and
thing.
And you obviously had
seen.
No self control.
We had no self control. We were sniggering our way through it. I knew nothing about Twilight. Nothing. And Mirren had actually said, no, we have to go see this because these books are huge.
Yes.
She said these books.
I bought the books because my cousin's daughter, that everything was happening. And I thought, you know, with my own kids, I thought, I got to know what's going on here.
Yeah.
And it is really, you got to know what's going on. You think, I don't want to know. but I have to.
Yeah, and I kind of went, oh, it's about vampires, and apparently the books are popular, so let's do this.
Yep.
So we went to see it. Now, what was really interesting was that we kept glancing over at the 14-year-old who was sitting like three seats away from us, who was in tears for most of the film. And we're going, this is unbelievable. She's in tears. So funnily enough, when we came out of that screening, there's all these critics, there's all these people there. Who was it that we wanted to talk to? We wanted to talk to her.
Yes.
And we walked over to her and we introduced ourselves. We introduced ourselves to her mother, you know, and we said, you know, just so you're a big fan of the books, obviously. And she goes, yes, I've read them all, because the books had all come out by that stage. Maybe Breaking Dawn hadn't come out. I'm not sure. But anyway, three of the books, I think, were out by that stage. And we said, so you've read all the books? She goes, I love the books. The books are fantastic. I said, so how did the film hold up? And she was like, it was amazing.
Mm.
And she said, it just absolutely captured the books. And it was this and that and blah. And then she went on and she started to describe the stories of all the books that were to come. And we didn't know that Jacob was a werewolf at that point. But she started going, yes, and he, you know, the wolves come into it and blah. And my mother, Mirren, and I are looking at each other like, oh my God, she is obsessed by this. You know, yes, this is an absolute obsession. And so when we went in and we were talking about it, we were saying, obviously we know who this is aimed at. This is aimed at that, you said it earlier, that 14-year-old girl.
That's the hormonal,
you know,
waterfall. I did my own little bit of research about them and speaking to girls of that age group. And what fascinated me was, you know, everything at that point was like Team Jacob or Team Edward. But every single one, no matter who I spoke to, whether they were big fans or medium fans or whatever, whichever boy was there, it didn't matter. It was boiled down to the fact they all loved Bella / Kristen. Hmm. So that whatever it is about her, she has... You know, even if the werewolf or the vampire are polarizing them, the boy, getting back to my original assertion, is, you know, insert self here. So yeah. She is, whether you think it's a role model, maybe it's not a role model, maybe it's an amplification of the.
You just did it. I don't even know if you know what you just did.
Oh, no.
Bella's a blank slate. That's exactly what she's...
She is? Oh, my God. We've cracked the code.
We've cracked the code. She is a blank slate. That's why she is written that way. She is written as an absolute empty vessel because the teenage girl inserts herself here.
Wow. Oh, what a hot team we are.
Oh, my. Didn't even occur to me until right now.
It didn't occur to me. I'm just flapping my gums and you...
Oh, my God. She's written... You could literally, in the book, you could literally leave the name blank throughout the book.
It's like those books, that, you know, with Christmas books. You know?
Oh, wow. And if that's the case, then
let's go write a book.
Kristen Stewart is an Academy Award winner. She is completely and utterly done exactly what was expected of her.
Wow. How Stepford is that?
Wow. Ooh. That's spooky. Now, I don't know if that's actually really what it's meant to be, but that's kind of, I think that's probably what Stephanie Meyer.
That is the zeitgeist. That's the one we're looking at. Mm. Not... You know, this is what they have done with what it is. But we're here scratching our heads going, what is it about this thing? And now we go, aha, you know, that it all makes sense. Because we've had to endure this since, 2008 on some level or other and try and come to some sort of understanding because, heck, we have an intellect. We have, you know, trying to make some reason out of this dross. And as you say,
there's a great I shouldn't say great. There's a very famous, let's put it that way, televangelist who I can't even remember their name now at this point. There's so many of them, but his quote mm-hmm. that always comes to mind and is so perfect for this. He goes, "Don't touch it with your mind."
Oh, yes. I agree. And, so and that's what we've been doing. We've been touching it with our mouths.
That's
crumbs.
Right. We've been thinking far too hard. I have been trawling.
No. But the thing was we had to sift it, you know, to try and work it out because...
We just needed to put it on the flames and let it distill down to its basic element. And its basic element
is the Bunsen burner. You've done it. And I mean, to think about these things, but it's also a cautionary tale to see what it is that these Hollywood types have taken... this adoration of this nil personality and made it work, whether they understood the psychology behind it or not.
The scariest part, though, I think we still come back to that original analysis, though, which is that whether it is a blank slate and the girls are supposed to insert themselves
it's
into
still
that character,
a very, very scary world.
It's a very scary
landscape
that they put themselves into, because what they've done is they've... Sorry, I'm just waving it because the door is about to slam. Can you go close that for me? They have basically put the Bella / insert teenager name here. They put them into a scenario
that is not healthy.
They put them into this strange love triangle, which is basically abusive in many ways.
Absolutely,
it is subservient, and it seems to be okay. And I don't know why it is okay, you know. And that's
maybe
the problem
it was made that way. Maybe that's it. I don't know. That it's maybe, you know, putting razor blades inside lollies. I don't know. That's just
in this day and age of empowerment, we're taking the power away.
Well, I mean, one could riff on that even further, because they're talking about how, you know, various, you know, the fashions and everything that the girls, you know, you can see what they had for breakfast and all that sort of stuff. Mm. And the videos and everything that they're very highly sexualized. That the high sexualization of very young girls is actually receding their power. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And their power is based on aggressiveness and obnoxiousness, not you know. There's a lot of things that are said about, you know, the loss of the gains that have been made. You know, there's an assumption of entitlement. Some things that I've read recently talk about the sense of entitlement that girls have, that they don't realize just how far they've come.
I don't even know if it's girls, though. I think it's entitlement of the current teenagers, boys and girls. They all feel entitled. They feel entitled. They don't have to work for anything.
Possibly.
Yeah,
probably.
It's the current generation. That's a generational
thing. Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't want to think, you don't want to sound like some old fart.
Yeah.
But
we are old farts, but that's beside the point. I got a question for you. You were going to mention something about being turned into a vampire and becoming beautiful at one point.
Yes. I was, because I was quite curious about the whole, I think I might have mentioned in my other review about the anorexic looking Bella, because what I was doing when I was researching my latest bit was trying to figure out if they CGI'd the kid's eyes. Remember I was talking about that. And I accidentally stumbled on something that talked about how they got Bella looking so skeletal. Yeah. And it was some sort of a dolly. It was wasn't CGI, it was actually...
Oh, physical makeup,
a puppet type of thing, like a little animatronic. It was an animatronic...
Animatronic prosthetics.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. And I thought, ew.
It's very well
done. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, but I knew there was going to be aspects of that because, like, she was laying down a lot, and be laying down, they can body replacements.
It was in fact an animatronic dolly that got it to be so
interesting.
Skeletal.
Here's an interesting thought for you, and I may be thinking way too deep into this.
Mm-hmm.
Could you draw things as we like to draw analogies to
all very
spousal abuse and blah blah blah? Could you think about this? She stops eating, becomes skeletal thin, in effect an analogy to anorexia, and the ultimate goal, the ultimate prize, I should say, at the end of all that is, she gets to be beautiful.
That's very interesting, because I don't think she deliberately stopped eating because she was just...
No, because it was because of the baby and stuff,
but
the message that's going across
she
becomes so skeletal and horrible. When she gets bitten, what's the first thing that happens? She blooms and she becomes beautiful.
And loses all interest in anything that... Well, she was like that beforehand anyway.
Well, she had no interest in anything.
But, I mean,
I don't know. I'm maybe digging too deep into that.
No. Something happened recently amongst my children's friends which could actually support that theory. I don't wish to speak about it any further, but it is a very, very interesting...
Do you not have to speak about them? I mean, just in general, though, anorexia...
Well, it's just something that it's reasonably close to home for me, and I'm thinking,
they're losing the weight because they think they look good.
Yeah.
So... The literal interpretation of that is the fact that she gets all skeletal thin, she effectively dies, but the ultimate goal is she's brought back and she's beautiful.
And so it's like permanently beautiful forever and everyone is locked.
Absolutely.
It's frozen.
So that's as I say, I may be digging way too deep into that, but with a film that has so much symbolism in it.
I don't know. And then we've come up with our blank slate analogy. I think it could be onto something.
Insert teenager here. Yeah, that's it's a bit scary. But anyway, so... I think it's been a very interesting journey. I'm glad it's over.
Me too.
What
are we going to do for fashion information?
Well, she doesn't have a new film coming out, remember? She's got the host.
That's true.
No, it won't be fashionable, though. I think.
Do they have science fiction fashion?
Well, it's also like end of the world type fashion. So.
Do they have fashions in the apocalypse?
I don't know.
The last time I saw something fashionable with a science fiction film was Fifth Element.
Or Gattaca. They're all wearing suits and.
Yeah, but no. But I mean, there was, you know, what's his name? That, like, did all the orange hair stuff for Madonna for Fifth Element.
Oh, Gautier.
Gautier, yes, yeah. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Fifth Element was cool. I am glad it's over. There has been mumblings and murmurings that Lionsgate actually wants to do another film. There isn't another book, but they have actually murmured that they want to do another
film.
Maybe
it'll be improvement because she won't be.
Well, writing one from scratch might be an interesting way to go. Although, current. Relationship between the stars. I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not. You know. Also,
they could do a prequel.
Robert Pattinson.
They could do a prequel.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Pattinson has already said that he is relieved it's over.
Yes.
He's actually hasn't been wanting to do it for a long time.
That I mean, he did his best. And I think it's a testament to the fact that they are actually actors that they got through it all.
Well, the funny thing is, I've seen him in other stuff. He's actually pretty good.
Yes.
Just got to get him away from that role. I've seen her in other stuff and I still can't stand her, but that's beside the point.
I saw him in a thing. I think it was definitely, might have even been pre Cedric Diggory, and he was in this telly movie with Catherine Tate. And he played this sort of nerdy sort of character. And gee, he was good.
Yeah.
He was really good. And he's such a wranger. Oh my God, I had no idea. I'd say they've fooled his hair for this particular exercise.
Well, there you go. So. We're waiting to see the future of a lot of these people. We're waiting to see. It's like, well, Anna Kendrick has already gone off and become a star. She was the bimbo. And it's funny. You look at this film. You look at this series of films. And the one character, the one actress who I would never have thought will be a star was the bimbo friend of Bella's, the human bimbo friend of Helen Bella, who was in the, and I always remember this one scene where they're getting dresses for the formal coming up, and she's going, "Don't my boobs look good?" and she literally talked like this, a real valley girl, you know, the whole bit. She's gone off to be things like Up in the Air and stuff like that. And you go, "You're actually a really good actress."
Well, it's good, and it hasn't sort of, you know, I mean, you see how these people, you know, progress from there. They talk about the curse of Blade Runner with all these brands and everything
sort
of sunk without a trace. I wonder if there'll be a curse of
Twilight
series to see just who sinks.
And I'm really hoping it doesn't affect Ashley Green or Billy Burke. You know, I mean, there's a few of them who you want to go off and
absolutely.
Do other stuff.
And I actually like Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson's already doing other stuff.
He's
Water for Elephants and, you know, stuff like that. So he is actually doing stuff.
That's right. And I think it's worthwhile. But I do find her a repellent character. I think she's got a little mousy face. She doesn't do it for me at all.
And I mean, quite frankly, when I saw Snow White and the Huntsman.
Music was good. Lots of cellos. And I do like, you know, what's his name? Hemsworth.
And Hemsworth was the best thing in it.
Charlize was good. Charlize
was boring. And I love Charlize Theron and she looks stunning, but she was given nothing to do. And that was the problem with the role. It was, once again, one of those badly written characters where you sit there and go, God, you could do
but
so much with this.
The costumes were lovely.
Once again, beautiful. In our review,
didn't have a lot of internal logic either.
No, it didn't. And the thing we actually said about that film in the review, if you go back and listen to that review, was that the visual design of that film was not its problem. The film looked gorgeous.
It did.
The problem with that film was its script.
Mm.
Once again, it was this badly conceived idea.
Turn the sound down.
Yeah, there's a bunch of films where you got to turn the sound. And the other problem with Snow White and the Huntsman, of course, was aside from Kristen Stewart, who was not Snow White.
No.
In any way, shape, or form.
Oh, bloody, let's go and have a battle. That's stupid.
Oh, it's just Snow White in battle armor. And I don't know, we had seen Mirror.
A little bit Joan of Arc.
Well, we had seen Mirror earlier in the year, which was the campy kids
film.
Was
that any good?
And I loved that film. Yeah. But it was not a great film. It's not, quote unquote, not brilliant filmmaking, but it was so much fun. It was gleefully silly, knew exactly what it wanted
Look,
to be.
If it can have a shortcoming and still have a bit of a chuckle in it, or, you know, as you said, it's got to have funny in it. If there's no funny.
Most important part, though, is that Lily Collins, who I don't think of much of an actress in, say, what was Wolf Boy's action film? What was that thing that he did?
He's riding around on a motorcycle. No, that was
Yes,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, where he was like, you know, secretly a secret agent or whatever it was. Whatever. Anyway, that piece of junk that he was in, she was the girlfriend in that. She was awful.
Mm-hmm.
she played Snow White in Mirror Mirror.
All right.
And she was radiant. She was gorgeous. She was just absolutely epitomized Snow White. You
that's
know?
Good, yeah.
And you sit there and go, that's Snow White. Mm. And then you've got Kristen Stewart being grumpy. You know,
but that's like, all she does. She goes from surly to grumpy and that's about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, she's the actress of one expression. You know,
I did like her in that thing with, what was it, you know, with the house went up into space. What was it? Zathura.
Best thing she's ever done.
Really?
There's yeah, been nothing because to... she was frozen the entire film. So,
well, she was frozen the entire series in this one. What are you talking about?
Exactly. There you go. No, it's just her because she's frozen the entire film. And when she finally does thaw out for her short scene, she is a petulant teenager and she is actually quite funny. Yes. And so you sit there and go.
And she's got lines.
And she's got actual, lines. Yes. And it works. And that was good. And Nicholas and I actually watched Zathura not long ago. Mm. And we went, oh my God, that's Kristen Stewart. We hadn't even, it hadn't clicked with us
yeah.
that was her the first time we saw it. You know, and it's so funny because we saw it and we went, oh, that's Kristen Stewart. And she's actually acting. She's got emotion. She's got
and you can
life.
Believe it, you know, you sort of, when she thawed, she, you're warm to her when she thawed. In an irony.
No pun intended.
Yes, it was.
No, oh, okay, that was totally, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Totally intended. Mm. All right, so as to go back 15 minutes ago when I said, I'm glad it's over.
Me too.
I'm glad it's over. I won't miss it. I will miss kind of the yearly eventness of it, but I guess for the next 3 years...
It wasn't worth the yearly event. It was just a bloody exercise and make money.
Yeah,
the only one...
the bitch every year.
Oh, well, I suppose so. The only yearly event that's been worth it has been...
I actually feel sorry for you because you had to do like 3 films in a row. Because you started this and had to catch up really quickly.
Mm.
Whereas I got to spread it out over... The 5 years, so.
And I put everything into it.
You
I really
did.
Do.
And then they're really good. And you should, everybody who is listening to this should go out and read those because they are really good theses. And they're very funny.
Thank you.
They're well worth having a look at. You can find them all on geekactually.com. Now, all right, we should wrap this up because we have been going for a while. I just want a couple of quick little adverty things out here just to make sure everybody knows we're on the same page. You can write to us, of course. Send your feedback. Agree or disagree. And boys is Twilight, so people always get hot under the collar. Agree or disagree. Send it to feedback@geekactually.com. You can find us in every back episode that we've ever done at geekactually.com. Our regular co-hosts are Josh Philpott. Find him at rawdlc.com. And our regular co-host, Richard Gray. Sorry, Richard. Richard Gray, you can find him at therealbits.com. Is there anything you want to pimp? Have you
not really.
Got anything except for your articles?
No, that's about it, really. No. I'm just...
And now that this is over, I hope you do continue to write for us. You don't have to keep doing...
You just give me something fun to do.
Look, find a film that you like and write about it and send it to me. You're welcome to do this. I love your writing. It's good stuff.
Thank you.
That we just have to make a couple of announcements. As you know, we're all in hiatus at the moment. We will be doing some more specials coming up. There is a Skyfall special and a Hobbit episode coming up.
Hey.
Behind the Panels will be recorded again next week, and we're doing Why the Last Man, so read up and listen to that. Now, I also want to throw out there, because we mentioned it on Behind the Panels last issue, but I should mention it here because there's different audiences. Apple has invited the Geek Action Network to in-store. We are going to be doing a workshop for Apple, possibly 2. We're not sure at this point. Just giving everybody a heads up. We haven't got an exact date yet, but it will be in February. We're going to be in-store talking about podcasting and how we do our podcast and why we podcast and blah, blah, blah. So that will be in the Sydney stores. It'll be in the Bondi and possibly Sydney. If you are in the area, we would love to see it because we're going to use it as an opportunity for a meetup as well. So please, by all means, you'll be allowed to come along. It'll be free and it'll be kind of fun to meet everybody. So we're just giving people heads up on that. We will give more dates as time goes on, but keep February clear at this point. And that's it.
I do want to say one thing.
Oh, yes, go for it.
I'd just like to thank my family for their support during this journey. And their input, which I've quoted a lot. I'd also like to thank my sister for, you know, all the support she's given.
I think we need to do a show with you and Katrina.
You won't be able to tell our voices apart. And I'd also like to say thank you very much, Beck, for being supportive for the last 2 movie attendances. You've been a star and I really appreciated your input. And there you go. And thank you, David, for the opportunity.
You're more than welcome. That will wrap us up. We did open the film. We opened the show with Carter Burwell's track, I Know What You Are, from the original Twilight. We're going to go
Which is quite nice. And
which
cool.
is nice. And we're going to go out with a slightly longer version of that so you can actually hear the buildup. You probably hear it actually underscoring us right about now. So keep listening. It will build up. That's it. So we're pretty much done here. We will see you on the next show, which will probably be Skyfall at this point, because I'm
looking forward to that.
Me too. And of course, Film Actually, episode 100 will be The Hobbit. And as we said, in January, everything goes back to normal. We will actually have new shows, but the final episode of Film Actually will be The Hobbit. And that will be the mark, the 100 episode mark. And then we will start numbering from episode one on whatever the new show is going to be. We are taking suggestions for titles. We put it out on Twitter already. We've had some interesting ones already. We are looking for a name. Whoops, knocked my microphone over. We are looking for a name for the new film show. We are looking for a name, and for those who are musically inclined, we are looking for a theme. So these are the two things that we are looking for. So if you are interested at all in contributing to the new film, the new look film, actually, it won't be Film Actually, it'll be whatever we're calling it. One suggestion was, and I always love this one, so to give you an idea how off the wall we can be. Mm. When I was all the way through my teens and 20s, I always sat in exactly the same seat every time I went to the movies. It was a compulsion for me. I had to
No,
sit there.
It's triangulation. You got to get the best angle for your eyes.
It was
everything. That's not compulsion. It's fourth row from science.
The, fourth row from the front in the middle.
Ah, right. Okay.
And that was my favorite seat. Even if a cinema was empty, everybody else always goes, grab it. I was this one lone person down in the fourth row. So I thought at one point, I actually put it out on Twitter. I said, why do we call the podcast Fourth Row from the Front Middle? And somebody said, that could be interesting. Anyway, so that's kind of, we're going left field. We're going anything you want.
You know, I just thought of a theme.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'd be able to use it. It was the old Bugs Bunny, you know, overture, la la la, night. I like that one.
That's not bad. I was actually thinking of something original, though. I was the musically inclined to see if they can write us a theme. That would be interesting. But somebody is actually writing us a theme at the moment for our Behind the Panels podcast. So
that's very cool.
We haven't heard it yet. We're waiting to hear it. So it'll be very interesting. Anyway, so if you have suggestions, feedback at filmactually.com, or you can hit me up at Twitter at David McVeigh. I'm always kicking around there, or on Facebook. Facebook.com/geekactually is the Facebook page. That's it. We're going to go. Robin, thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for joining me on this finale.
It's been a delight. It has been an absolute delight. And now that we have penetrated the inscrutability of the Bella character,
the Bella code,
our work is done.
It's done.
The pebble is snatched from the hand. That's it.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.